If it pleases the court, my name is Martin Maradian.
Hold up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, my name is Martin Maradian, and I represent Ms. Naheed Azad Froze. This matter arises out of a dogfight between Blue, who is the appellant's son's dog, and Gunston, the appellant's neighbor's dog. In granting the assignment, the court asked that we address the procedural posture that brought us here. Virginia Code 8.01670A3 establishes that any person may present a petition for an appeal to the Supreme Court if he believes he is aggrieved by a final judgment in a civil case. In O'Malley v. Commonwealth 66, Virginia Act 296, the Court of Appeals determined that an appeal of a first offense of Virginia Code Section 3.26540 as an instant appeal is civil in nature. In County of Henrico v. George Ellers, 237 VA 594, the court stated the plain language of the statute suggests the hearing is a civil proceeding and not criminal in nature. In Settle v. Commonwealth, 55 Virginia App 212, the Court of Appeals determined that Virginia Code Section 3.1796.115C, which is the predecessor statute to Virginia Code 3.26450.
What about the provision that requires this to be treated as a misdemeanor?
That, Your Honor, that's stating that the misdemeanor rules apply to this matter, but not that the case itself is a misdemeanor. In fact, in subsection L of the statute, it specifically says that a second or subsequent offense is a misdemeanor, and even goes on to cite what would be a felony in that statute.
Right, but I mean, all right, all correct. The second charge becomes a criminal offense and a misdemeanor offense, but doesn't the language of the statute require all of these cases to be treated as if they were misdemeanors for purposes of procedures, including appellate procedure, even though the first offense would not, in fact, be a criminal misdemeanor?
It does say that, Your Honor, but and it also grants in the statute a right to a jury and criminal standard of proof beyond a reasonable doubt are also there. And if it were, in fact, criminal in nature, then it would not that language would all be surplusage.
So are you saying the first offense has come to us and the second offense has come to the Court of Appeals?
Why would
the General Assembly do that? Why would we hear the first bite, dog bite, but the Court of Appeals hears all the second, third, and fourth dog bite?
The Court of Appeals doesn't hear violations of DUI statute for refusals either. That was decided by the court in Commonwealth v. Rafferty, which is 241 BA 319. And the court in that point conducted an analysis of the posture for unreasonable refusal in a DUI investigation at 300. It talked about the fact that the General Assembly intended to make refusal a criminal offense. The 1977 amendments simply could have provided that an unreasonable refusal to submit to a blood or breath test is a misdemeanor and not an administrative and civil proceeding. Additionally, the right to a jury and proof beyond a reasonable doubt were added to it, and both are inherent in criminal proceedings. As in Rafferty, when enacting 3.26540, the legislature specifically set out the right to a jury and heightened criminal standards of proof. And if the legislature had intended that the first violation of the dangerous dog statute be criminal, the reference to both of those rights, the right to a jury and right to proof beyond a reasonable doubt, would have been unnecessary. And then, as I said, subsection L talks about what is, in fact, a misdemeanor and not...
I'm sorry, my last question on this subject. Subsection C of 6540 says the procedure for appeal and trial shall be the same as provided by law for misdemeanors. Am I right?
That's correct, Ron.
Well, procedure for appeal means the procedure for appeal, which means notice of appeal, petition for appeal, and the place you appeal. So why would it be the same for misdemeanors?
Because the court in O'Malley at 299, citing Canova Electric Contracting versus LMI Insurance Company, and stated it's well established that the Court of Appeals is a court of limited jurisdiction. And unless the statute confers jurisdiction to the court, we're without power to review the appeal. The court didn't establish that the Court of Appeals would be appropriate. It just said that the same procedures as with a misdemeanor.
Well, 6540C is a statute, too.
It is, Your Honor, but it doesn't specifically confer jurisdiction on the Court of Appeals. That this matter is civil, and therefore the appropriate appeal from the circuit court is to this court. Additionally, Your Honor, if this court were to determine that it was inappropriate and filed in the Supreme Court, it should have been in the Court of Appeals. 8.01-677.1 would require that this court not dismiss the matter, but just remand it to the Court of Appeals.
Fair enough, then.
The issue in this case is really the meaning of the word occur within the code 3.2-6540. The legislature required in subparagraph A1 III that the attacking or biting dog shall not be deemed dangerous if such attack occurs on the property of the attacking or biting dog's owner or custodian. The statute does not describe or define what occurs means. This court hasn't addressed whether occurs means where the bite occurred or where the attack happens. The written order issued by Judge Gardner incorporated his rulings from the bench, and Joint Appendix 5 is where that's located. The court ruled from the bench, pages 192 and 193 of the transcript, that I believe the attack may have been initiated based on the testimony of Anik Pavic, that based on her testimony, the attack was initiated on the Ally property, but I will find that the final element of the attack, which resulted in the serious injuries to which the parties have stipulated, took place on the property of the Kearns. And because the serious physical injury took place on the Kearns property, the defense that is referenced in paragraph 3 of 3.26540A does not apply. The Virginia Code 3.2-6543 uses the term occurs, which is defined as in many, many dictionaries as to happen. Initiate.
Why can't an attack, I mean, occur is not the same thing as initiate. Why can't something occur in multiple places?
It can occur in multiple places, Your Honor, but occurs is a wider term and covers a larger time frame than initiate. Initiate is part of a subset of occurs.
Right.
You initiate where it starts.
How does that help you?
Multiple locations.
I'm not sure how that helps you, though.
In other words,
it starts on one property, it continues on the other property, it occurred both places, therefore the attack occurred in a way that falls within the plain terms of the statute.
Well, it occurs, meaning if it occurred, the attack occurred on the attacking dog's property, then that attacking dog is not a dangerous dog.
No, I understand that, but if it only occurred on that property. But here, according to the factual findings, it began one place, so it occurred there, and it continued next door, so it also occurred there.
That's
and
correct.
So therefore, it occurred.
But when you take what you just said, Your Honor, it occurred on the biting dog's property. And therefore, by virtue of the statute, 6540A sub 3, that dog is not a dangerous dog because the attack occurred on that dog's property.
If Justice McCullough is asking, it occurred on both properties, did it not?
It did, Your Honor.
Okay.
But because it occurred in part on the biting dog's property, that biting dog by statute is not a dangerous dog.
Help me with
what if that dog was, okay, let's say that the fight began at 9:58 on the Frouse's property. At that instant, that dog was not a dangerous dog because that dog was fighting on the property of its owner. It's now 9:59. Now the fight has moved over to the Kearns' property. The fight is occurring on the Kearns' property. Forget what happened before. Now the fight is occurring on the Kearns' property. Does that now meet the statute? Or is it? Are you precluded from looking at what's happening at 959 because of what happened at 958?
The question, I think, really would be whether this has been a continual attack. If you have an attack, it breaks off, and then another attack happens later on a location that is not part of the Biting Dog's property, then you would have to...
So if the dogs go back to their respective corners for a minute or two to chill and, you know, get wiped down, and then go back into the next inning or the next ring fight on the 15 yards on the other side of the boundary, that changes the law?
It changes the facts, actually, Your Honor, and it doesn't change the law, because you now have, instead of having one fight, you have two. And if you have a continuing event...
Well, a typical boxer would say the whole darn thing was a fight, and when he went to his corner, the fight was still on, he was just taking a breather.
Well, that would be in a boxing match, Your Honor, and if the whole match went on, each round in that analogy could be considered a separate attack.
I mean, your argument is intuitive and logical in the sense that the dogs are oblivious to boundary lines.
Yes, sir.
But then we're a plain language jurisdiction, and we just look at the plain text of the statute, and it seems like you want us to blue pencil the statute to say the attack began on one property. But it's not what it says. It just says occurs.
Actually, it occurs is what I'd like the court to rule on. Occurs, what's the meaning of occurs? Occurs is if the event happened at any point during that event, if it happened on the attacking dog's property, then that attacking dog is not a dangerous dog. And if you consider the fact that in order for it to happen on the attacking dog's property, the other dog has to come onto that property and then becomes an instigator. And by that virtue, that dog is a trespasser and should not be given.
And gives the attacking dog the right to cross the boundary, chase him down, and finish him off.
Well, it gives the attacking dog the right to defend its property. The Commonwealth...
Yeah, and chase him across to the other guy's property and finish him off there.
The Commonwealth, in her closing argument, specifically addressed that issue, Your Honor. And I'm running out of time. I don't want to use it up, but it's listed in my brief as to what her language was, where she actually says we can't impugn on the dog the knowledge of where the property lines are and where the borders are, and that I can fight up to this post in the ground and I have to stop. We can't imply that the dog has that knowledge.
Counsel, this hypothetical may or may not be relevant, but hypothetically, two individuals are fishing on the south shore of the James River, which is in the city of Richmond. And they get into a dispute and they start a fist fight. And the two of them then continue the fist fight into the river, which happens to be in Henrico County. Which jurisdiction's court would have jurisdiction over that assault and battery that was taking place? One or both?
Both courts, Your Honor. Okay. And you could analogize that to something along the lines of larceny being a continuing offense, and that's
because the assault or the assault and battery occurred in both the city of Richmond and the county of Henrico, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And it's a continuing offense, and because it's a continuing offense, jurisdiction goes to both jurisdictions.
Okay. Explain to me why that would be distinct from what you're dealing with.
It would not be distinct, Your Honor. In fact, that would...
So it occurred on both properties, this fight?
It occurred on both properties, Your Honor. The fight started on the Ally property and progressed onto the current property. It was a continuing event, a continuing fight, just as it would have with larceny being a continuing offense.
I think you're giving away your argument. The question that you're being asked, of course, is whether or not it could continue and occur on the Kearns property. Are you saying it did?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question.
Don't let me take you too far. You go ahead.
Your argument appears to me to be that if any part of it occurred on the dog's property, they're covered by the statute and they're not a dangerous dog.
That would be accurate, Your Honor.
So if it started on the property where you would be a dangerous dog and it rolled the other way, he wouldn't be, and the statute doesn't apply. On your argument.
Well, on the argument that I'm making, that would be correct, Your Honor.
Just wanted to clarify what your argument is. Right, you have 22 seconds left.
Your Honor, I would ask the court to reverse the circuit court and find that the blue is not a dangerous dog.
You have 12 seconds left.
I deserve the rest, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
May it please the court, my name is Kelsey Block and I represent the Commonwealth. Your Honor have essentially put your finger on the issue that...
I'm sorry, I know you're just launching it. but can you help us with the jurisdictional point Justice Kelsey was asking questions about? We just need to make sure we're the right forum for this.
Certainly. I would point Your Honor to Commonwealth versus Rafferty, 241 VA 319. That case was considering the same language that procedure on appeal is the same in criminal to find that both the Commonwealth could appeal and that the proper venue is in the Supreme Court and not the Court of Appeals.
So you agree with your opposing counsel on that point, that this is the proper forum?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, thank you.
So, counsel, I want to ask about the essentially the safe harbor, that if you look at what policy the General Assembly may have been advancing, the General Assembly may have been saying that a dog is permitted to essentially defend its property. If dogs are territorial, and that if someone comes into your yard, a dog will defend it. And dogs don't know where property lines are. So if this dog was defending its property and just happens that it crosses the property line, why, and if that indeed was the General Assembly's policy, why would the safe harbor not continue for as long as that particular transaction continued?
There are specific exceptions later in the statute in what was subsection C and is now subsection E that says no dog shall be found dangerous if it was responding to pain or protecting itself, its kennel, its owner's property. That gives the judge the discretion to determine whether or not the dog was defending its property. That was not the finding in this case. So all we are looking at is where the fight physically occurred. And in this case, it doesn't say fight, it says attack, which is referring to an attack that triggers the dangerous dog statute. When the fight began, the dangerous dog statute wouldn't have applied, even though it was on the Ms. Froese's property, because serious injuries had not been inflicted. As it continued off of the property, serious injuries were inflicted. That is when it exits exemption A11, and we look to A13 to see whether it is still exempt, which it is not because it occurs off of the owner or custodian's property.
Now, if we presume that when the fight began, the dog is a territorial animal, was defending its property, how could the intent of the dog, I don't know how one measures dog's intent, but how could that change based upon a property line that a dog could not have known of? And that's the kind of what we're grappling with.
I don't think it could have changed if that was the dog's intent, but the statute gives it to the judge, the trial court judge, to look at the evidence and decide whether he thinks that the dog was still protecting its property. And it also gave the judge the ability to find that the dog is not dangerous for any other good cause. So if it was the case that, based on the evidence, the dog was defending its property, the judge could have found that, and he did not.
The trial judge agreed that the fight started on Blue's property, and his ruling was very specific to, but the serious injury occurred on the Kearns property. Are you and the trial court reading Romanet 3 to indicate that the place where it occurred only looks to the attacking and biting and not the serious injury, the three occurrences from A, if that makes sense? That Romanet 3 does not apply to serious injury or inflicted injury, only to attacking or biting?
No, I believe that it says such attack, where such attack occurred. I believe that that is referring to an attack that inflicts serious physical injuries, which is one that implicates the dangerous dog statute. Without serious physical injuries, an attack is not...
So looking at as the trial court did as to where the serious injury...
Yes, Your Honor. I would also say that the trial court was not definitive in its finding that the fight began on Froese's property. The judge said that it may have occurred, possibly occurred, but he also found that Commonwealth's witness was the most credible and had the best view, and Commonwealth's witness said that the fight entirely occurred on the Kearns property.
But under your reading, what would happen if the fight began on one side of the property line and serious injuries were inflicted, and it continued unabated across the boundary into the Kearns property?
That would fall within the exception of A1-3, because the serious injuries occurred on the attacking dog's property, meaning that the attack that is relevant to the dangerous dog statute occurred on the attacking dogs.
Even though the attack continued unabated across the boundary line and serious injuries occurred before and after. Recalling the venue hypothetical is given to you, if a crime occurs continuously across a venue, across a geographic boundary, venue is proper in both jurisdictions. The fact that it's proper in more than one is no relevance at all. Why is that not the case here?
If serious injuries occurred in both places, then yes, I do believe it's not exempt under A1-3. If serious injuries only occurred on the attacking dog's property,
right.
I think that's a different case, but we're in agreement that if serious injuries occurred in both places, it is not exempt. Ms. Frizz also makes the argument that there was not sufficient evidence to find that she is the owner or custodian of Blue. Ms. Frizz waived that argument because she did not renew her motion to strike in her closing argument. Regardless, there was ample evidence because Ms. Frizz was emailing with the neighbors about her dog, called it her dog on the stand twice, and after the attack was also communicating with the neighbor regarding the attack. For all these reasons, we ask that you affirm the trial court's judgment, and if there are no further questions.
All right. Do you choose to use your 12 seconds?
Your Honor, the Commonwealth is now arguing against itself from its closing argument, page 190 of the transcript, and the use of the word may have occurred, Your Honor, is the definition of reasonable doubt.
All right. Thank you very much. Call the next case.